the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. Trump and the economy, how much will it impact his re-election? A lot of folks are talking about impeachment. We'll also look at Demi Lovato apologizing for her trip to Israel, and are we allowed anymore to travel to politically incorrect places? We'll look at loneliness and possibly forgiveness too. Brooke, your birthday is coming up. What's going on? Tell me about your birthday.
My birthday week. I love it. So everybody knows in the office that it's my birthday week because I have told them like a million times. And also they gave me a card today and brownies, which is wonderful because the best way to my heart is food.
Yep.
And sugary food, that is. And so, yeah, it is birthday week. Tomorrow is my official birthday, which is Friday, October
27?
4th. Yep, 27 years old.
Not bad. I was close. I knew you were 20-something.
Plus a few years.
Yeah, plus a couple years.
Just a couple.
Yeah. You don't look old, though, so. That's my
thanks,
compliment
Ray.
For the day. For bro.
You don't look old.
No.
Thank you, Ray. I appreciate old. That. It's so nice of you.
And you're not old.
I'm not.
So you're
not
younger
old.
Than me by a decent amount. So you're not old. And I don't look, well.
You don't look old either, right?
No, but my hair is graying, but that's okay.
You know what? I don't have a problem with graying hair.
No, women think you're rich if you have gray hair.
So there you go. Yeah. So you just keep graying it.
Yeah, so you can fake totally. Out. I mean, I'm married, so don't have to worry about it. But if I was single, they would assume I was rich because of my gray hair.
Or wise.
Yeah, or wise.
Or both. That's probably the best
one. I don't think, you know, the little hottie girls, though, they don't care how wise you are, right? They just want to.
They don't. I don't think so. I don't think there's much depth underneath that surface. So.
Yeah, I'm not picking on all you hotties out there, but, you know, some of you don't really care about if a man
You know
wise.
What? Shallow people exist in every.
Sure. Like, every socio
level
slash
of
group.
Hottiness.
Yeah, but also,
there are
yeah, every group.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Level of haughtiness. That's what I had to go with.
So, okay. Just real quickly before we jump into Beto, but, you know, a lot of people on social media saw it was Amber Geiger, the Detroit police officer who was convicted of murder. I think she got a 10-year sentence, which is kind of what people were expecting. She was getting anywhere from like 5 to 99 years, but most people were expecting the low end since it wasn't like a premeditated murder, to my understanding, obviously, when she went into the wrong apartment and shot Bentham. I forgot his name.
Bentham Jean. 26-year-old accountant.
Yeah, so it just got a lot of interesting play on social media because Bentham Jean's brother forgave her during the sentencing part of the hearing yesterday after the trial and gave her a hug in front of everybody. Of course, all the cameras. And I noticed, too, on social media, there are people who wanted to, like, kind of cash in on the forgiveness as well. I forget, you know, and there are a few of those. I'm not dissing that. I'm just
saying.
Are
you calling out my tweet about the importance of forgiveness?
No, I just saw some people who. No, I saw a few people who were like, well, I was talking about forgiveness last year. Like, okay.
Oh. Trying to be relevant.
Yeah.
Forgiveness is always in season.
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
Just put that out there.
Yeah. No, but I mean, a lot of people are talking about how it was just a great statement of Christian love. And it was good to see. And it makes you think that there, you know, amidst all the despair and amidst all the hysteria, that there's a lot of good news out there. I don't know if you had any comments on kind of what you saw, what people are talking about.
The brother, he's only 18 years old. His name is Brant. And I watched the video last night and was just moved incredibly because to see that level of forgiveness and for it to be articulated in that way where it was heartfelt, it didn't seem scripted at all, but still was quite. He was conveying it very clearly how much and how deeply and how honestly he forgave her. That was just moving. It was challenging because it caused me to even reflect inwardly, okay, what are areas in which I have held grudges or need to deal with some stuff or ask for forgiveness? I mean, this is something that we're always going to deal with in life is we will offend even unintentionally and we need forgiveness or we have been offended against in some ways very egregiously, such as Brant. Was the case with Brant. So I just think there's so much power in forgiveness. And I don't think I've ever met anyone who has chosen to forgive and then later said, I wish I was still bitter, or I wish I still held on to that. I mean, it's just so freeing to forgive. It's hard, but
it's hard. I think that's the word that is, you know, that needs to be declared here, is it can be very hard to forgive, especially if you were legitimately wronged, you know. That's the hard part. And for someone to lose a loved one that they were close to like that, and then forgive so quickly, you know, for a lot of people, the process could be years or decades if they do forgive at all, or they just spiral out of control because of unforgiveness in their life. And, you know, I don't know the dynamics of that story. I don't know if she petitioned to ask for forgiveness, but he just decided to give it so freely. And it was a very powerful statement, and it's moved a lot of people. And I hope it has a significant impact on the lives of people moving forward, because there are a lot of people, especially people who are in tune to kind of the social media culture where it's about destroying other people, that here comes a different narrative to a story and a human connection that I think will hopefully people will absorb. Yeah. Instead of destroying people, that you can empower people and yourself through forgiveness.
Absolutely. And there's one quote I just wanted to read from that exchange between him and Officer Geiger. And he said, I wasn't ever going to say this in front of my family or anyone, but I don't even want you to go to jail. I want the best for you, because I know that's exactly what Botham would have wanted you to do. And the best would be to give your life to Christ. Again, I love you as a person, and I don't wish anything bad on you, he stressed. And then he embraced her. He asked the judge if he could hug her. He asked the judge twice. The judge relented the second time. And apparently the judge was visibly emotional as well. But then to watch that long embrace, it was just powerful and beautiful. It's beautiful. And so it just serves as a lesson for all of us on the importance of forgiveness and asking for forgiveness and extending it, even if you haven't been asked to be forgiven. Sometimes you just need to extend it even before that person asks you, because maybe you never get that apology, but you can let go of it.
Yeah. So, exactly.
That's our sermon for today.
So with that, have you forgiven Beto for that YouTube video on the flu shot?
Moving on to other serious things.
I thought we should just briefly touch on that, because it was so bizarre to me to witness. Beto, of course, puts things that he deals with in everyday life. He had the filling at the dentist's office, or the cleaning, or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. He hasn't done a colonoscopy yet. But
Oh yuck!
I'm just saying, you know, he
don't put him back. Don't put it past him. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he does all these things on video, and you know, Bernie didn't do his heart stint thing on there. I know.
How rude was that?
So, but you know, Beto, I think, is trying to, you know, reach the common man. I'm like everybody else, and I thought Andrew Yang, he had something up the other day. I'm skateboarding in a room, and he looked a lot more natural than Beto, and it's just kind of. I don't know if you saw the video. He kind of like flinches up before the needle hits his arm. And
I have thoughts on that video. So yeah. I saw it, and he was about to get a flu shot. And I told you earlier today, I didn't even wince that much when I was delivering a baby. Well, wow. Probably did. I probably did. But I'm just speaking hyperbolically there. I was appalled at that. I would not have allowed that video to go viral if I were him.
Yeah, it didn't.
His PR team shouldn't have let him
do that. It. And I remember just thinking, I was like, how is this guy a Texan? I mean, he just, I don't know. And he's not, you know, I don't work out much, so I'm not making fun of his. But like, why put that out there when your sleeves rolled up? You kind of look like a little scrawny boy.
Well, okay, so I don't know. I didn't think much about his arms either way, but it was just the thirstiness with which he chooses to embark on these very personal videos.
Is that just normal now though, Brooke? I mean, are we making fun of it? Are we a little bit older and maybe out of touch?
Me being old, right?
Okay, but are we out of touch then? And that's just normal. I mean, people just putting stuff on video.
Yeah, like who likes that? And maybe it's the younger generation that resonates with it.
Yeah.
Okay, so like Tulsi's workout videos, I saw a lot of rave reviews.
She's pretty.
Yes, yes. And I saw really good reviews for that workout video. That was more, to me, it seemed like she was in her natural element anyways.
Yeah.
Whereas with Beto, and then also Warren's Instagram Live, where she's sharing a beer with her husband. Yeah, and like, thank you for being unnatural. Here. It's the authenticity that comes with it that I think is what people resonate with or are turned off by. And so if you can't do something like that authentically, or at least pretend to be authentic about it, I think that you're going to flop on it. And I really believe that the flu shot video was a flop. So
yeah, it was a big flop. So let's take a break. Tell us, Brooke. Hopefully you have the information up. Tell us when our pole lunch is. Our pole breakfast. I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, breakfast. It is. Our pole breakfast.
Are we allowed to release our commentator? I would assume we are.
Yes, we are. That is public information now. We have just emailed attendees. And so our pole breakfast is on October 24th. It is at 7:45 in the morning. I'm pulling up the location. I believe it's Hilton Garden. No, not Hilton Garden. And North Raleigh Hilton.
Yes, ncsivitas.org. You can get all the information on that.
Yep. And our guest commentator is
Tim Boyum, Spectrum News.
Spectrum News. And so he is well known, especially if you follow North Carolina politics. Excellent, excellent host. Mm-hmm. Knows a lot about all of it. So definitely someone that you would want to provide some additional insight. So he'll join our president and CEO, Donald Bryson, to take a deep dive into these poll results. And as we get closer to the election, you're going to see more political questions, especially ones that we recognize are shaping the conversation, the policy conversations. And so definitely be on the lookout for that. We'll send a press release the day of the poll as well, so you guys can dig into those crosstabs if you're a nerd like us.
And North Carolina is not the state to be living in if you want to ignore this presidential election.
Correct. So we are a swing state, right?
Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of attention here, obviously, as everybody knows going forward. It's just going to be ground zero for all of the 2020 chaos. And, you know, so that'll be good for us. It'll probably be good business for Civitas. But, you know, if you're trying to escape that, North Carolina is not necessarily the state to be in at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to see a lot of campaigning around here. A lot of these presidential hopefuls will be making their way here, have already made their way here. We've had Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders. President Trump has come multiple times. So we will continue to receive some of the spotlight for good or for ill.
Yeah. What do you want to transition to next, Brooke? I mean, do you want to talk loneliness? Do you want to talk Demi Lovato, Trump and the economy? I mean, are there anything that you think we definitely need to address here?
Oh, well, I would say all of it. But let's go ahead and talk about Demi Lovato first. Mm-hmm. I think that this is just yet another part of the outrage culture that we live in. And it highlights, her story highlights just the absurdity when someone is unhinged from reality and puts all their hope in politics. So I'll let you explain that and set it up.
Yeah, I mean, she got on Instagram. I kind of just perused the story a little bit. I didn't do a deep dive into it, but she got on Instagram because she had posted some pictures of herself in Israel. And I think she talked about having a trip over there, and she got a lot of blowback, obviously, if you go to Israel from, you know, her, I don't know, I assume she has millions of followers. I don't know much about her. I just know that she started on Barney.
And Disney star, singer,
yeah.
So faced some personal struggles.
So. Anyways, people were calling her out for going to Israel because of their views towards the Palestinians, and their conflict with the Palestinians have gone on for decades and decades and decades, if not centuries. So, you know, she got back on Instagram and apologized, and I don't have the statement up, but it was very like self-flagellating. I mean, she self-flagellated herself for not understanding.
I'm so sorry that I just didn't satiate.
She called herself ignorant, I believe. They were like, it was so self-flagellating that I couldn't believe it. Because usually you get those non-apology apologies, but I don't even know what this was because it was so self-flagellating.
Please buy my record still. Yeah. Well, and to think that she would behave that way after visiting a longtime U.S. ally, and then yet Beyonce and Jay-Z go to Cuba a number of years ago, probably 8 years ago or so, and totally fine. No one bats an eye.
Right.
President Obama went to Cuba.
Hey, Dennis Rodman goes to North Carolina.
North Korea.
He does go to North Carolina on occasion. Well, he shouldn't. I mean, remember when everybody was boycotting North Carolina? I think Dennis Rodman did come here during that.
Really?
But anyways, it was North Korea is what I meant to say. There are a lot of similarities between North Carolina and North Korea.
Oh, my goodness. Take that back. That was horrible.
No, that was obviously a joke.
Yeah, so anyways, I think that it is particularly telling of the decline of culture when we can't even handle an American citizen visiting Israel, one of our longest U.S. allies. And I don't think she should have apologized whatsoever.
Yeah. So, I mean, just me, it's just another sign of like the sad state of our social media.
But who really cares? I mean, there's probably...
No one really cares.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the us normal folks, we could care less where she's vacationing to. And I'm sure that really wasn't going to impact sales. It's just this echo chamber, that this little seedy, tiny echo chamber of people that like to foment this sort of drama. And they gin it up to a degree that people think a lot of folks feel that way. And it pressures movie stars into issuing these ridiculous apologies for things that they should never apologize for. But at the end of the day, the everyday American consumer that's probably buying her music could care less. So,
yeah.
The end.
The end.
All right. So let's go ahead and talk about the economy. We had mentioned that we were going to discuss this because you brought up a good point and you pointed me to an interesting article that has to do with... you know, President Trump, the impeachment discussions that have been ongoing ever since he was elected, right? Yeah. So it was Russia yesterday, today it's Ukraine, tomorrow, who knows, China, maybe, I don't know. But you were pointing out that there are other bigger issues when it comes to his reelectability that he and his administration probably need to be mindful of and consider making some changes and getting out in front of if they hope to be really, really competitive on this front.
So. Yeah, I mean, you and I were talking earlier about how manufacturing is in a decline, and that's been going on for a significant amount of time in this country, but it's amped up again in some sectors of the economy, and certainly states Trump won by, you know, Michigan, even though they've had an economic comeback, they're still declining a lot in manufacturing. Certainly auto industry is suffering to some extent because of just a kind of a stagnant auto market to begin with, and people aren't buying, especially young people aren't buying a lot of cars anymore. And then, of course, you've got manufacturing down in Rust Belt states and certainly in parts of North Carolina as well. And so it poses a problem for him in the reelection. Is he going to be able to win these states that he won and kind of took from Democrats? So I think that's a big deal. I think the economy is going to be the bigger issue, so to speak, in sort of this impeachment noise, which I don't think is actually going to last. I think it's just kind of background noise and Democrats trying to, you know, to some extent, maybe sabotage the economy and sabotage any sort of headway Trump can make on some of his policies. But, you know, I think Trump really has to go out and kind of solve some of these trade problems that, you know, he's created on his own, you know, to some extent, you know, with some of his tariffs and things. I mean, it's hurting farms. There was a report from the agricultural department that small farms may not recover in this country. Wow. And we, you know, a lot of us saw that they just may, many of them are on their last throes and they will not be able to recover from some of these tariffs. So, you know, these are problems that Trump faces. And I think the way, if he can navigate some actual real deals and stopping some of these trade wars going on, that could be an advantage to him economically going forward. And it'd be interesting to see which way, if any, he pivots, or, you know, Trump has the ability, I mean, has the sense right now in his own mind to kind of double down on some of these trade wars. And so we'll see kind of what direction that heads. And it's kind of interesting to see.
Right. And to think that we were gaining some meaningful momentum, I would say, when it came to tax reform and the tax cuts in 2017. But those, as we've learned, if you look at Kansas, for example, at a state level, you can make all the, or issue all the tax reform past that. But if you're not changing spending and obviously implementing these sort of tariffs against now the EU as well, China, threatening them against Mexico, our large trade partners, then you're going to feel the impact of that. You can't live like that indefinitely and not feel some sort of impact. So it's unfortunate because the American people end up suffering from this. Farmers, my uncle's a farmer, and, you know, this is real people's livelihood. Some of these farms have existed in families for generations, and bailouts for them, or these sort of just, yeah, compensation prizes or consolation prizes, they'll only go so far, but they're not going to win votes if they're continuing to feel the pinch and their retirement savings or otherwise are continuing to diminish. So I think that that's certainly problematic going forward.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, some people are still forecasting a recession. So it's going to be interesting to see what will happen. I don't know if I have quite of a dour opinion as some of those prognosticators have in terms of there's going to be a big recession coming or even a you know, semi-mild recession. I'm just not sure about that. But it is interesting to kind of see where we are, because I think the impeachment stuff has kind of faded in the background of the economy. And people who remember Clinton, he did so well in re-election in 1996 because the economy was booming. You had that huge tech bubble in the 90s, which Clinton benefited to a large degree. I mean, it brought in record taxes in this country. And so, you know, even though impeachment was going full throttle before that, it really had no impact on Clinton because the economy was thriving. And I suspect a lot of the same things will be true of Trump. I mean, if the economy's thriving and continues to grow, then I think Trump will has a good chance of skating to re-election. But if the economy bogs down, I think that's going to be a bigger obstacle for Trump than this sort of impeachment stuff, which I think to me, look, I've tried to look at it objectively. It just feels so politically motivated that I have a hard time taking it too seriously. So,
yeah, I believe people in the middle that are a little bit more moderate, even if they didn't vote for President Trump and have no intentions of voting for him, they see this just as blood sport. And it's sort of cutthroat politics rather than something meaningful. However, you and I discussed this last week, so I don't want to continue to rehash it. But when it comes to impeachment, there are some reasons in which impeachment is justified. And so if it turns out that a president, any president, commits those sort of justifiable or acts that would warrant impeachment, then proceedings should go forward. That's just the way it is if we want to retain a credible republic.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the Democrats have completely shot themselves in the foot by talking about impeachment from the day one. Yeah. And so now you're in a situation where it looks like you're negating an election because you didn't like the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the political reality and the dynamics that they set themselves up with. And the media too, to some degree, has not understood what has happened to this country and sort of the rejection of establishment politics, right or wrong. It's been rejected by large segments and swaths of this nation. And I think kind of to double down on sort of this establishment mentality that we know what's best and we're the leaders, I think is a mistake and could lead to an even bigger and more dangerous backlash, to be honest. So anyways, let's talk a little bit about loneliness, because you and I saw that studies. There's a great George Jones song. Anybody's watched that PBS country music documentary, but A Cup of Loneliness by George Jones. It talks about relating to the loneliness that Christ felt on the cross, but George Jones wrote about that.
Okay.
Well, you're just not reverent enough.
So sorry. Yeah. We were trying to be serious, I guess. Yeah. I was trying to sing the old lonely song.
Okay.
Okay.
Just not reverent, you know?
That's why I have you, Ray.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you sent me this study about millennials. 25% of millennials say they have no friends.
They don't have a single friend.
That's sad.
Oh my goodness, that's sad. If you think about one quarter of an entire generation says they have not one other person in their lives with which they could call a friend, I mean, what does that do to culture at large? That has monumental impact, I would say, just in the rise in the deaths of despair that we see happening, in the way in which we relate to people. So we wonder and scratch our heads at how political discourse got to where it did. Well, when you don't have other people with which to interact, with which to give and take, with which to forgive and be forgiven, you don't learn some of these critically important human values that are important to fostering healthy relationships. It's devastating and completely sad. So anyways, this new research, I have this report is on vice.com. And it says 25% of millennials don't have a single friend. It was a YouGov poll, and it discovered that millennials are the loneliest generation today. It spoke to over 1,200 people, and this is where the generational divide gets particularly pronounced. And it's 30% of millennials surveyed say that they always or often felt lonely, as compared to just 15% of baby boomers and 20% of Gen X. So double the amount of baby boomers. Millennials double the amount of baby boomers when it comes to feelings of loneliness. These are people in the prime of their lives that are young, youthful, live in urban centers oftentimes, have fairly steady or promising jobs, should I say, at this point in time, if they've received a good college education. A lot of them are very deft with technology, and yet this is how they feel.
Yeah, I think Sinclair Lewis, it was either F. Scott Fitzgerald or Sinclair Lewis, who said that cities are the loneliest places on earth. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. For me personally, I've often felt the loneliest in crowds or group settings, Brooke. I don't know if you've ever felt like that. And yeah. maybe it's just sort of a slightly introverted kind of design in which I was made, but I often don't like, I often feel lonely at parties, or I feel isolated in big group settings. And I think that comes from being lonely earlier in life and having to deal with more authenticity and feelings in my own life. And, you know, I don't like the small talk stuff as much, mm-hmm. like some people might. I like kind of deep conversation more so. And you don't get that in sort of a party or social atmosphere all the time, probably most of the time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's something I think that, you know, because there's a difference between, and we've talked about this before, but there's a difference between loneliness and sort of seclusion or isolation. And to me, loneliness points more to, I think, a little bit of a lack of meaning in your life. You know, I don't know if it necessarily has to do with, I don't know if it has necessarily to do with not having friends per se, or not having a social circle, as it has more to do with a lack of meaning or purpose, a higher purpose. Because look, I mean, you know, back in the olden days in the early church history, the desert fathers, and some of them claimed to be very, very happy because they went out in the desert, became very isolated, did their own things, right? James, the book of James says, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. So people wanted to be isolated and they wanted to go off in seclusion because they thought that would make them happy. It would make them more holy, ultimately. So there's this great paradox here of loneliness. And I think for me, I experienced times of severe loneliness. Certainly moving to Mississippi, I didn't have friends for a while and that was okay. It was hard, but I think it helped me become more sensitive to people around you. It makes you a little bit more of a creative person. I think it made me a better writer because I think it allows you to be in tune more to people's feelings when you're alone. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think we focus on the negative aspects of loneliness, but I think there's a lot of positive stuff. But I think if it's not oriented in the right way, then it only becomes a negative. But I think if you orient it in the right way, I think loneliness can actually be a positive because I think it can make you more in tune to other people. It makes you more compassionate. It makes you reach people in a way that you wouldn't normally other reach people. And it causes you to deal with your true self, right? I mean, I actually like being alone sometimes because it forces me to reflect in a deeper way that you wouldn't otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'll let you go on and no, that's kind of explain some things.
A really good point. There is a critical level in which I think someone should spend some time in quiet contemplation, reflection, and loneliness can kind of develop some necessary calluses that we need to be able to be resilient through difficult times in our life. Definitely have experienced periods of loneliness as well, despite having children and a spouse and great family. But when you move around a lot, mm-hmm. as you are familiar with as well, and you have to constantly remake your community, that initial period of doing so can be challenging, and you might feel adrift or like you're kind of out to sea by yourself. And that does... it can initiate some soul searching and looking inward, and I think that's helpful. So I don't believe that the solution is necessarily giving children unending interactions with other kids because we're afraid they're going to feel lonely. Loneliness in and of itself is not always a bad thing, but it's that perpetual state of loneliness that I think we're seeing poorer health outcomes, poorer societal outcomes. Like I touched on, the deaths of despair, people committing suicide or turning to prescription drug use or illegal drug use, things like that. And so that's the component of it that I think we really need to be mindful of and address. And so we know other countries are starting to see this. They're further down this road than we are, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And so fortunately, though, we're able to learn from some of what they're doing, what's working, what's not. But we had discussed how Japan is renting friends, renting family members, mm-hmm. which sounds
very big in that country.
Horrible, right? To our minds, that just seems so inauthentic, and we do value authenticity. But that's the degree with which they are trying to address loneliness in a way that that they just haven't been able to find any other solutions. And so they're willing to go to this degree that they're actually leveraging capitalism in a way that is renting people out. So we're about to, we won't have much time, so we're going to close out soon, but really curious as to your thoughts on that. Do you believe there are some ethical issues that come out of renting friends?
I think so. I mean, I think it's something that would become more accepted in the future. You already have sort of the sin aspect of that with these sites like Sugar Babies and whatnot that you see making the news more and more. But I do think you'll see in this country now more mainstream of renting friends as things become, you know, services become more of this commodity as you can just sort of purchase. We live in a very materialistic age. So I think more and more people will be open to the notion of, oh, I can rent a friend or a pseudo family member. You already have, you know, I don't know about this country, but I know in Japan, of course, renting the dog or an animal to be a companion is also very popular. So you're going to see that in this country to some degree as people become a little bit more isolated. So there'll be a marketplace for that. And there are going to be people who are willing to cash in for that. I think it'd be hard for me personally to kind of go out there and make money off people who are lonely in a way. You know, there's a sort of, you know, commandment in the scripture to give of ourselves. And of course, you know, our whole created order, God talks about man is not made to be alone. So, you know, we're made for community. But I think to profit off that, I do think there could be some problems with that for sure. I mean, certainly, I think a part of this is just the rise of secularism and the collapse of civil society. There's less clubs and engagement for maybe people to be involved in that are deeper. Certainly, if people aren't going to church, then they're not going to have some of these deeper relationships that they are missing out on in those sort of fashions in those communities. So, you know, from an ethical standpoint, I do think it's a problem. I do think it's a sort of, if you're going to go out and be sort of a rent a friend, why I don't know if I would call it sinful per se. I do think it's sort of you're not giving of yourself if you're a person of faith in the right oriented way.
Okay. Well, there's a lot to continue to consider in that and producing meaningful community. So we'll probably, when we see new stats from this, we will probably bring them up and discuss them. It's an ongoing conversation that warrants discussion.
Absolutely.
So,
and come to Civitas events if you need a friend.
Yes.
Because we will be your friends.
That's a great place to meet
friends. And I will charge you like a low rate.
Okay. Also, you'll charge them a low rate.
Yeah.
Okay. You got to talk to Carrie about that because you're about to get in trouble.
I'm kidding, of course.
And I am an free. Excellent matchmaker. So if you're single and I know other single people, you just let me know. And I love meddling in other people's relationships like that. So feel free to let me know.
Hey, that's, yeah, Brooke said
that's an extra service. I have been responsible.
Just make sure you're single. Don't come in.
I said single.
Okay.
I said single. I'm not like, yeah, doing that. Ashley Madison stuff. No, but I have been the proud matchmaker of at least two longtime successful marriages thus far. And so I'm always looking for new clients, but I don't charge. So.
I don't charge either. I'll be your friend. I don't know if I'll be able to hook you up with a spouse, but I'll be your friend. You can cry on my shoulder. But seriously, come to Civitas events because we will actually be kind to you and we'll have a lot of fun. We won't just talk about it.
We'll be nice.
Yeah.
Promise. Okay, you guys have a wonderful week and we will talk to you later.
Thank you.